You are listening to AWOL Radio, a production of the Grand River Media Collective. As it has been since 2008, I am your host, Dan Keller, and I want to welcome you to the show. For past episodes of AWOL Radio and more from the Grand River Media Collective, please visit grandrivermc.ca. AWOL Radio live broadcasts weekly from 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario, radiowaterloo.ca on the web, from 4 to 5 p.m. on Fridays. We broadcast from the territories of the Anishinaabek, Haudenosaunee, and Neutral Nations, in the land of the Dish with One Spoon and Two-Row Wampum Treaties, within the boundaries of the Haldimand Proclamation, and with the intention of honoring these treaties and the many other historical and contemporary agreements our settler governments have made. We do this with the idea of protecting the land and the water for those who come after us.
Sites in Wet'suwet'en territory, in addition to potential village sites. Portions of the ancient Sui In flight are CGL's consulting archaeologists and construction crews. Several cultural heritage resource ribbons that were placed along Squee War Trail in 2011 by representatives of the Westmen were removed by CGL contractors and replaced with ribbons indicating CGL's road centerline. On July 31st, 2019, Coastal GasLink acknowledged that construction activities have occurred in areas where no archaeological impact assessments were ever conducted. In stark violation of their permits to operate under provincial law, the province has yet to investigate or justify why Wet'suwet'en cultural heritage is being decimated by CGL. The destruction of archaeological sites contravenes BC provincial law under the Heritage Conservation Act. The Squee War Trail is central to Wet'suwet'en cultural identity, traversing several house territories and reaching over the Coast Mountains into Asela territory. It was the Squee War Trail that the Wet'suwet'en received many of the names and crests that are symbols of who we are as a people today. Many of those that fought in the war were wounded, and where they died along the trail is where their spirits were released. Their bodies traveled no further. The spiritual connection to the Squee Trail is unique and should not be disturbed. As Minister of FLNROD, Doug Donaldson has the ability to issue a stop work order for damage caused to the Squee War Trail under the new provisions of the Heritage Conservation Act. A stop work order up to 120 days can be issued when something of heritage value is likely to be altered, is being altered, or has been altered. The Squee War Trail has been and continues to be irreparably altered. CGL has disclosed non-compliance in several areas to BCOGC archaeological conditions, yet has faced no repercussions from regulatory authorities. The Office of the Wet'suwet'en has not been informed of any existing dispute mechanisms or appeals process available to Indigenous groups regarding BCOGC permitting and non-compliance. Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs believe that a stop work order must be enacted immediately to prevent further loss of Wet'suwet'en heritage by the negligence of Coastal GasLink. The OW takes the loss of Wet'suwet'en cultural heritage and archaeological sites very seriously, as should any company or government agency working within Wet'suwet'en territories. Again, you can check that out on wet'suwet'en.com, and it is a request for an immediate stop work order or a cease and desist on Wet'suwet'en lands related to destruction of cultural heritage. Check out also the Unistoten Camp on Twitter for updates on this. All right, getting into what I had mentioned earlier today, we are interviewing regarding ongoing violence, attacks against tent cities in the region, and the ongoing opioid drug poisoning crisis epidemic. Continues to experience. So let's get right into it. We are speaking today with Julian Ickham and perhaps another guest. Julian Ickham, WordPress.com, posted on October 4th. Tent City attack. Tent City was attacked 2 nights ago. A group of right-wing hooligans with machetes and baseball bats. 5 tents were destroyed and 2 people were beaten so badly that they needed to go to hospital. This attack on Tent City is one of the most recent attacks on progressive forces by reactionaries who act knowing that they have state support, particularly the City of Cambridge backing them up. The City of Cambridge, particularly the mayor's office, is guilty of inciting these forces, though through their use of anti-poor people rhetoric. Tent City feels they have the right now to do what they must do to defend themselves, and these attacks will not go unanswered. Like the good book says, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound. Today we are speaking with Julian Ickham. Julian, could you tell me what happened and why you posted this message?
Okay, so 2 nights ago, people were at Tent City. We were doing one of our educational classes because we believe Tent City is more than just a place where people sleep. It's like what we're trying to do at Tent City is we're trying to implement our proposal to solve the drug problem without actually having any funds from the city. Those people on my Facebook message, on my Facebook, are used to getting messages, can you spend $30, can you send $40, etc., etc., etc. So we have a free food program, we have educational program, were having an educational workshop when a group of about 12 people busted in swinging bats attacking us. We were caught off guard, and we got into it. Some people got it real bad. One person was hospitalized for getting a few bats to the head. Another was hospitalized for other bruises and such. They went slashing the tents, making them unusable, and it was quite clear they didn't fear for like any sort of repercussion. They were taking their sweet ass time, and some of these people are familiar with, and some of these people are actually older. Like there were a couple of young people, but there were a couple people in their like early 60s, you know. Like the fact that these people feel they can do this and act with such impunity just goes to show that they feel untouchable, but they are untouchable. They are working for the state. We've seen some of these people the first day that we set up our safe injection site outside of regional council. We've seen these people at different events, and they're all on a safe Facebook group, A Safer Cambridge, and their actions is just basically the logical conclusion of the rhetoric coming from the mayor of Cambridge's office when the mayor of Cambridge talks about zero tolerance policy in the downtown core. They're talking about eliminating a social group. They're talking about eliminating a whole class of people. And once, like, it's just one step from talking about removing people from the downtown core to actually talking about removing people. Like, what we're having here is fascism in this classic definition of the state pushing corporate interests and using working class people to attack other progressive forces. So you have these right-wing ideological attacks coming from the mayor's office, and then you have these thugs on the ground, you know, attacking the people that the mayor's office doesn't like poor people, homeless people. And if you look at their Facebook group and their description, they make it quite clear they're anti-tent city, they're anti safe injection sites, and their argument is that they want to encourage treatment, but we know that's a bunch of bullshit. They're just saying that so they won't be attacked for hate speech on Facebook.
Yeah, just to be clear, do you have any like direct evidence or links putting these people like, to the City Hall in Cambridge, or is it just the rhetoric that's coming out of City Hall happens to match this rhetoric, or even emboldens the type of actions that are happening?
Well, it's both, right? Like, the evidence we would use would be that this group, A Safer Cambridge, has had meetings with people in the mayor's office. At the safe injection site meetings, this group has been there and has backed up what the mayor's office has been saying. And part of it is also the rhetoric that the mayor's office is using is inciting these people. Like, these people are welcome at Cambridge City Hall to present their views, and they're shown when they present their views as just like another legitimate group. The City of Cambridge accepts them as a legitimate group despite the fact of what they put on their Facebook. And then they hear this rhetoric from the mayor's office, and they act in this way.
I'd like to get into it a little more, some of the people, but in terms of the, just to bring it back to what we were originally discussing, was the attack on the tent city. Like, that was multiple people. Were they masked up, or are they identifiable?
They're identifiable. See, that's another thing. They didn't even, like, care to mask up. They, like, it just goes to show that, like, they think they're beyond. Like, they are acting with impunity because they are untouchable.
Hmm.
They came unmasked, and it was really, really quick. I don't know if I could identify people off the bat. I got a blow to the head myself. I have a minor concussion, but I did recognize one or two of them from like meetings in the region. Yeah, that's one of them.
So just brought up a picture because we've been, you know, obviously on AWOL Radio and our affiliates, we work to track some of the extremist right behavior coming out of the region. Folks going against safe injection sites, as we were saying, folks attacking tent cities, any anti-poverty work, people protesting anti-poverty work, I guess the pro-poverty workers. And one of the people that we've been tracking for quite some time, Gordon Stewart, out of what I thought until recently was out of Cambridge, and he might still be out of Cambridge, but we also have recently, the entire membership list of the Canadian Nationalist Party, the Canadian Nazi Party, just went public as they've become a legitimate or a real political group in this country. There is a Gordon F. Stewart from Brantford on this. You go on Facebook, Gordon Stewart. Well, that's the Gordon Stewart who we know to have been harassing anti-poverty activists, harassing overdose prevention sites, and it's might be pretty obvious here. These links are certainly coming together that this man's also part of the Canadian Nationalist Party. And as Julie mentioned, this certainly looked like one of the people that attacked Tent City as well.
So just, if you look at it, like the ideology of Nazism, eugenics, basically the purpose of eugenics was to do away with poor people and to eliminate poor people. Like the ideas of social Darwinism, which were promoted by not just the Nazis, but a lot of capitalists in the turn of the century, is basically that poor people need to be wiped out because they have bad genes. And there have been laws targeting indigenous people, poor people, people with addictions and alcoholism to like stop them from having children, forced sterilization and stuff. And like the root of fascism is eugenics, and it is like pro-capitalist, pro-corporate, anti-poor people. Some of the first targets of the Nazis were communists and anarchists and anyone that stood up for poor people.
Okay.
And so it makes sense that, like, you would have, like, these, you know, a cleaner Cambridge and these people also being part of the Nazis.
And tying all of these things together is something that, like, it's, you know, that these people are working in these apparent legitimate organizations or organizations that are meeting with the mayor's office. And using the same language. We're going to continue, obviously, to track this. Is Tent City, this particular Tent City, there's multiple locations, of course, different people across this region. There's a lot of people with their homes in this region. The Tent City that you've been organizing around, is it continuing despite these attacks?
Of course. Yeah. Like, it has to continue because, first of all, a lot of people don't have anywhere else to go. And people are safer together than separate. A lot of people get attacked when they're sleeping by themselves. Several years ago, maybe a decade ago, there was a person sleeping in Moss Park called Paul Crouch. He was beaten to death by a bunch of army racks. Many people in Victoria Park who've been sleeping there have reported attacks, you know, drunk people having nothing better to do. It's acceptable to attack poor people. It's acceptable to criminalize and attack homeless people. And it's quite horrible that in this day and age, that it's totally acceptable to discriminate against these poor people and drug addicts.
Has there been any response from the city, from any level, like city, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge? I know this violence is happening right across the region. Have any of the mayors come out to talk about it?
No.
To condemn?
No one has condemned this violence. And it's interesting because maybe it was 2, 3, 10 cities ago, Tent City was attacked with a machete, someone on that attacked Tent City, and there were people from the city there when, and the region there when it happened. They were happy that we sorted it out quickly. One of them called the police, who arrived after the situation was sorted out, but they're aware of these attacks. They're aware of what's going on, and no one has come out to pretend.
Right, so again, we're speaking with Julian Eckham, Tent City Attacked. Check it out on julianeckham.wordpress.com, and of course, as Julian mentioned, it's continuing, and we're going to get back into it. We're just going to go to a song, quick break. This is The Day the Nazi Died here on
Das ist ein Antifaschismuslied und dieser nächste ist auch ein Antifaschismuslied. Wir sind immer noch ein Antifaschismusband.
The Nazis vanished without a trace, but battalions of fascists still dream of a master race. The history books, they tell of their defeat in 45. They all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died.
They say the prisoner of Spandau was a symbol of defeat. Whilst Hess remained in prison, then the fascists, they were beat. So the promise of an Aryan world would never materialize.
So why did they all come out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died?
The world is riddled with maggots, the maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats.
They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride.
And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
Around the world, it's epidemic levels. Anyway, you look at it, we have first another post from julianeckham.wordpress.com. Alan Ryan's People's Community and Defense Brigade meets Prime Minister and Mayor on September 16th. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was in Kitchener-Waterloo. The Alan Ryan's People and Community Defense Brigade used this opportunity to address issues of safe supply, the opioid crisis, and Venezuela. The next day, members of this organization met with the mayor to discuss our proposal to solve the drug problems that is killing many people in Kitchener. The discussion went quite well and will be followed up by a presentation to council on Monday at 7. Shortly before this presentation, there will be a public consultation and report on Tent City and the drugs crisis at 5 p.m. at Queen Street Commons. And that is the lessons from Tent City and why we need safe supply. Julian, could you talk a little bit about this talking with Trudeau, however that went, and this upcoming event?
It was actually accidental that we ran into Trudeau. I was downtown trying to procure medicines that I needed, particularly marijuana and other things. I have a prescription for this. I was downtown trying to find drugs. I have a prescription for these drugs. I'm not, like, breaking the law, really. If you order it on the internet pod, it takes forever, and there have been many complaints and whatever else. And my health has been getting worse and worse, and I haven't been able to, so I need to smoke a bit or other such things. And people were saying that the conservative guy, Andrew Scheer, was at the Crown Plaza. So we went prepared to boo Andrew Scheer. When turned out it was Trudeau, so we got to get some questions in, and we had some sort of discussion and around the issues of safe supply, Venezuela, and the opioid crisis, and it went pretty well, I guess. Like, basically, we made our point. He knows who we are, knows what our position is, and whether or not he will do what he says he'll do, we'll have to wait and see. But it's quite clear that nothing will happen with safe supply if we don't push for it ourselves. The reason we have a safe injection site now is because people have kept on setting up illegal safe injection sites. 2 years when we were talking about safe injection sites and doing illegal ones, we were told that it would take at least 10 years for Kitchener to have a safe injection site. I think that this month coming up, we're going to have it open up. Safe supply, it's the same sort of thing. People don't know what's the point of having a safe injection site. People are buying poisonous drugs. People don't know what they're getting, and people are dying as a result of this. 2 days ago, I had a good friend of mine overdose in front of me, and they took four naloxone kits to bring them back. At our 10 city and our safe injection site, we see overdoses all the time, and no matter how often you see it, it's really, really scary. Like, you see people's faces turn purple. You see people practically dying. Sometimes their hearts stop, you know, and you won't, it's not something you get used to. And the reason is that people don't have access to safe drugs. When we set up the tent city in August, up until the second week of September, we had a supply of pharmaceutical heroin that we procured from a sympathetic pharmacist. And we were handing that out. We set up five categories. The first category is non-user. We don't give it to non-users. The second category is occasional users. We don't give to occasional users. We target the addicts. And within the addicts, you have three categories. Pill takers, who take like Percocet, morphine, whatever, orally. Then you have people who are doing like morphine, heroin, whatever, intravenously. Then you have people who are using street fentanyl and other sorts of fentanyl. So this heroin was really high grade, and it was aimed at people who use street fentanyl as an alternative. It was able, people were able to have their needs met, people were able to get unsick and to function. Heroin has a life of 8 hours, so that's about one shot a day. People have been able to get on with their lives. Within the area near Tent City, there's been a drastic drop in crime. There's also been a drastic drop in overdoses. While we had the safe supply going on, we did not have one overdose at the safe injection site or at that. And the reality of the situation is safe supply is something that can easily be done. It only costs a few dollars to produce a really large quantity of heroin. It's been shown that people who use medical heroin can get on with their lives, have much higher standard of living, and don't have issues around overdose. Don't have issues around other sorts of like diseases that one gets because of abscesses, other stuff that one gets from having drugs off the street. I myself have noticed crystal meth, and not just small quantities. Like, you could actually see the chunks of meth in street fentanyl and street heroin. And if people don't use meth, they inject meth pretty bad. And like, you don't have Narcan. If someone overdoses from meth, there's little you can do. Really, it goes sort of down. quite dangerous. And so people are dying, it's preventable. People are living miserable lives, it's preventable. Addiction is a social issue. Safe supply is something that many cities are starting to do as an alternative to criminalizing people, and it's something the city of Kitchener should do.
Is that something that anybody at the region, anybody at the city has discussed or has seen to be amenable to? Like, certainly, like, regional health must be thinking about these things.
Like, the point is that a lot of these people, they're not directly affected by it. Because they're not directly affected by it, it's not their loved ones, it's not their friends that are going through this. They look at it as kind of an academic issue, right? So academically, they might be in favor of safe supply, or academically, they might be against it. But to them, it's not a life and death problem, it's a matter of opinion. Have an opinion, and they can sit and have a discussion, and then go home and watch their TV while people on the street are dying, ripping each other off, and doing horrible things just to survive. And the issue with an opioid dependency and opioid addiction is it's not an issue of people wanting to get high or having pleasure or this and that. Although something should be said about the criminalization of, people wanting to alter their state of consciousness. For many people who are addicted, it's an issue of not going through withdrawal. It's an issue of not being sick. Methadone is a lot more addictive than heroin. But the reason that methadone is effective is that it's such a strong opioid that has such a long half-life that people can have a drink and get on with their day. And methadone seems to be socially acceptable despite the fact that it has more negative side effects than heroin. And methadone withdrawal is 6 months as opposed to heroin withdrawal, which is 1 month. Like, if someone can go, and take some time off and go through opioid withdrawal, you can't really take 6 months off to go through methadone withdrawal. Methadone also is bad for your bones and has all the other negative side effects that other opioids do, including overdose and that sort of thing. But because it's dealt with medically, it's acceptable. The same thing can be done with heroin. And there's many examples in Britain in the past before the war on drugs, there's many examples of doctors that used to prescribe heroin. People would live normal lives. But again, the fact of the matter is it's poor people that are, the opioid epidemic cuts through all classes, right? 60% of people who are addicted to opioids have started with prescription drugs to deal with pain. And in many ways, the opioid epidemic is a pain epidemic. However, the problem is that poor people feel the negative side effects of the addiction a lot more than people who have money. If you have money, you have the drug every 8 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours. You fix yourself up and you go on with your lives. Poor people, it's not that simple. They have to get the money. How are they going to get the money? Their drug supplies are probably, affiliated with crime and stuff, whereas the middle strata has a bumper between them and the street where people don't have that bumper, in many cases actually a bumper. So they feel the effects of drug use and addiction a lot worse than
that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
And in many ways, the drug problem is a social problem that needs to be dealt with socially. On Monday, we're going to talk about our experience at Tent City, what we learned with safe supply, and we're also going to talk about our proposal that we're bringing to City Council. can be found on my blog, Our Solution to the Drug Problem, I think it's called. Basically, what we do is we look at the drug problem as a multi-focus problem, and our idea is that basically we want like two buildings or two locations. One of them would be a dry location, a drug-free location, and that would be for the purpose of preventative, right, to stop people from getting on drugs. So at this location, we have cultural activities, we have hip-hop shows, metal shows, guitar classes. We also have people there to deal with WOESP, housing, landlord, tenant, that sort of thing. As well, there will be emergency housing as well. In the other building, we will have a safe injection site, much more like the Vandy model, as opposed to the model the city is using right now. The Vandy model is like a peer-run model where people can come and shoot up, and you know, there will be people there trained with the lock zone. But it won't be like a medical model where you go and you sit down and you're treated like a number, you know, or a statistic. We'll also have like people on site that will, you know, help people to get off of drugs if that's what they want to do. We're also going to have people there to help people find housing and other and maintain housing as well as employment and deal with all the issues that people are facing. Well, it'll be first come, first serve, because unfortunately we are doing this with little to no money. But yeah, it'll be first come, first serve. We think that everyone could be housed if the city wanted to be housed. One of the things we are thinking of is actually pushing that the city give us the bus shelter. There's a bus station along the way that's up as for people are used to going and camping out, and can easily house hundreds of people in the bus station. It's going to be demolished anyways. We're dealing with it. Right? Like, we could run all these programs out of the bus station, as well have a consignment shop so people can grab some crap and sell that. And there's already like a restaurant there. We can run it and say there's a way like eating ourselves. We think the bus stop would be an amazing place for this. It's going to be demolished anyways. They should leave it to us before they demolish it.
I know there's no immediate plans for the building or for the lot. You know, they don't have buyers and they don't know what they're doing with it. Yeah, they have buildings that they have fully serviced buildings right now that could very easily be transferred into services like you're suggesting. And Jamie, bringing up that point, like, how do you decide? Like, it is, you said it, like, it's all an emergency. Like, how do you, everybody is facing this emergency if you're on the streets. Like, and having that money from the region for housing that they just, like, you know, they keep saying they're doing such a good job, but...
Getting younger and younger people are, like, 13-year-olds sleeping on the street.
And then from there, to get on the drugs, it's like, you know, you're cold, you're miserable. Well, then you get high, you might be cold, but you won't feel that cold, you won't feel that miserable. And your life's fucked anyways, why not? You know, you don't want to face how vulnerable your reality is, so why not blend in your consciousness? Like, the solution to the drug problem is a solution to the human problem that we're facing right now, and it's a problem that people are miserable because they're living in miserable conditions. They're living in miserable conditions because our society is based on exploitation and making people miserable so other people can be rich. With the bus station, we could solve the housing crisis temporarily. temporarily, as well as, you know, have a place to run programs out there that solve the problem. Like, they built 9 units recently. It's had, like, what, several $1 million? I forget the exact number. And with that money, you know, like, we're running a tent city with, like, donations from, like, people off of Facebook. And, like, it's a handful of people that are getting pissed off or whatever. If we can do that, imagine what we can do with $9 million. It's an issue of, like, bureaucracy and the systemic, like, exploitation of poor people by poverty pimps that are making a living off of poor people. Like, there's so much bureaucracy that's getting paid through the shelter system, through all these different systems that, like, people don't want to solve the poverty crisis. Poverty is money. And not just in the Marxist sense of, like, exploitation, but poverty is money in the sense of the creation of a bureaucracy to deal with poverty. Like, places like House of Friendship, you know, like, they don't want to solve the poverty problem. They don't want to solve the housing problem because they need profit.
We see the local, the regional government every year dump millions more into policing.
Yeah.
The budget now has, what, 170 million, 165 or something supplied by the regional government. That is more than half of the regional budget. It has gone up by 40 million in the last 10 years. 10 years ago, like, since then, like, $40 million a year, every year, going to the cops. I mean, if more policing were a solution, I think things would have been solved by now.
Yeah.
What are the effects? What do you see the effects of this increased policing? We don't see a reduction in homelessness. We don't see a reduction in drug use. We just see more harassment and more cops. And they're putting that money into, you know, like, punishing people, getting them trapped up into the prison system, into the court system. This endless flow of money that's not looking at the actual problem. And we don't, as you said, we don't seem to have a problem putting money here and putting money there, supporting these capitalist causes and these bureaucracies, but never, like, focusing on the actual solution and the actual problem. And that's why, like, work like you're doing at the tent cities with safe injection sites, people pushing this problem, trying to make what the mainstream has turned invisible, trying to make that visible for everyone to see, and that kind of thing needs to be applauded. Thanks for the work that you're doing. We have seen some, you know, as you said, the safe injection site, it's happening. It's going to hold it. Like, that's pretty big for this region, finally. Cambridge is another issue. Why don't we open a second one? The fight goes on, and this thing on Monday, you have this event on Monday, 5 o'clock at Queen Street Commons. You're going to then present to regional council?
After, yeah. We're going to council after presenting council.
Sorry, Kitchener City Council. So if folks are available, as we get to the end of the show, just trying to get all this info in, if folks are available on Monday, show up at 5 Queen Street Commons or show up at 7 at City Hall. Support this delegation from the Allen Ryans People's Community Defense Brigade talking about Tent City and the need for safe supply.
Yeah, people should definitely come out and support.
We'll have links up on the website, but check out, if you're on Facebook, check out Julie Nicom's account or the Allen Ryan People's Community Defense Brigade. Check out julienicom.wordpress.com for these details as well. As we get to the end, I just noticed something. I looked at this Gordon Stewart dude's page again, his Facebook page. He's friends with this Robosoc, who is the current Josh Payton, is screen name right now. Robosoc, a shredder from Ninja Turtles, the bad guy. Josh Payton is Chris Vanderveet's surety. Vanderveet, of course, who attacked the Pride in him. June, local Kitchener resident. These guys are friends on Facebook. This Josh Payton is friends with this Nazi Gordon Stewart, this person who has attacked 10 cities, who has attacked overdose prevention sites and anti-poverty activism. These kind of links, when you're talking about the Nazi Party, eugenics, and how these things come together, you know, we're seeing it in real time on social media. We're seeing the links between anti-poverty activists and anti-fascists. You know, like we're seeing these people getting together, spreading their networks. And I think listeners to Wayward Radio need to consider responding to all this.
Yeah.
Anything, we're last minute of our show here. Thanks for telling us about what's been going on. Anything else to add real quickly?
People want, they should bring donations to Monday's meeting. Money's good, but also tents are good. Food's good. Blankets, things that people can use at a tent city.
Great, and we'll put any fundraising links up on our webpage as well. GrandRiverMC.ca. Thanks for tuning in. This is AWOL Radio, in studio with